Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis. More than 2 million without power, streets and roads impassable, widespread devastation from Florida to Georgia to the Carolinas, all from Hurricane Helene. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis especially concerned about Gulf Coast and Panhandle communities that took the brunt of the Category 4 storm.
This coast from probably Sarasota up until up through Pasco for sure, where you had feet of storm surge that caused a lot of these homes to flood.
At least 64 people killed in the storm. Overseas, the Israeli Defense Force announcing a large-scale attack by air was carried out last night against military targets in Yemen. A high-ranking Hezbollah official killed, and the infrastructure and ports targeted were said to have been used by Iran to transfer weapons to the Houthi rebels. On the presidential campaign trail, just a couple of days until the VP hopefuls, Democrat Tim Walz and Republican J.D. Vance square off in a debate Tuesday night. This is ABC News. International cargo shipping could be impacted soon. Close to 50,000 dock workers are set to walk off the job at ports from Texas to Maine Tuesday morning. They're demanding higher pay and a ban on automation replacing cranes and trucks.
The East and Gulf ports account for more than half of U.S. container imports, facilitating the transport of everything from toys and fresh fruit to nuclear reactors. A weeks-long strike could create supply chain challenges, driving up prices for things like produce, seafood, pharmaceuticals, electronics, and cars.
ABC's Rena Roy at a port in Bayonne, New Jersey. Some estimates say the cost of a strike could top $5 billion a day. Lots of fun last night on NBC's Saturday Night Live. Actress Maya Rudolph played Democrat Kamala Harris, while actor Dana Carvey played President Biden. But all of the candidates, including former President Trump, his running mate J.D. Vance, and Harris's running mate Tim Walz, were all made fun of in an equal opportunity way. I'm Derek Dennis, ABC News.
Farmers in Wisconsin have always been ahead of the times, and it's no different in the mid-1800s. George Esterly was running a large wheat farm outside of Whitewater, but reaping his crop by hand was back-breaking work. Esterly invented a mechanical harvesting machine and used it in his own fields in 1844. He then won a Chicago Mechanics Gold Medal 4 years later. But was he the first in the country to build a harvesting machine? The answer is coming up. Esterly followed up his win by opening a factory in the Whitewater area, building the harvesting machines and eventually other farm equipment too. By the 1880s, 500 people worked there. So was Esterly the first in the country to build a new mechanical harvesting machine? Yes, this man's early farm invention lives on as a remarkable slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Artificial intelligence is controversial, but Wisconsin Technical College students are learning with the help of AI. Educators say it will prepare them for the careers of the future. Mike Moan reports.
Layla Merrifield, president of the Wisconsin Technical College's system, says manufacturers are making it clear they want a workforce that has the know-how in working with and programming machinery fitted with AI. She says that's why the system is integrating it with coursework at regional campuses.
Here in Wisconsin, we really have a structural workforce shortage, and our demographics are telling us that that will continue. And what we're seeing, it's really upskilling the workforce.
Elected officials face pressure to adopt regulations that would ensure artificial intelligence is used safely. Merrifield says schools in Wisconsin prioritize teaching students how to use AI ethically and appropriately. An analysis from the Center for Security and Emerging Technology says community and technical colleges have the potential to grow and sustain the AI talent pool, but barriers like inconsistent government funding need to be addressed. Merrifield says Wisconsin's campuses are coming off modest general aid increases from the legislature. She says they'll be requesting more in the next budget cycle. They also have to balance tuition affordability.
We understand that our students often come from limited means. They have limited financial resources, and so we try to keep tuition as low as possible.
And whether it's AI curriculum or other courses, Merrifield suggests they need the right amount of support to stay nimble and retool programming based on workforce trends. Waukesha County Technical College is one of the schools offering a class where students learn about the foundations of AI. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Tons of sunshine for your Sunday. Light east winds and lower 80s for highs. Tonight, clear skies, mid-50s. On Monday, more sunshine around the area. Highs once again in the lower 80s. Cooler with 60s for your Tuesday. Currently 71 degrees.
Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, very excited to have Lee McGowan, the politics girl, is going to join us as we break down the upcoming 2024 presidential election. Don't miss it.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and we are powered by Everlight Solar. Hey, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Cripescast. Today, my guest is comedian Matteo Lane. He has been named one of Variety's top 10 comics to watch. You may have seen his stand-up special, Hair Plugs and Heartache. He's been on Netflix's Standout as well as the Comedy Lineup. He is from Illinois, but let's not hold that against him. Okay, he's coming on to chit-chat, and he is coming to Milwaukee on October 10th at the Pabst Theater. So if you're in Milwaukee, make sure you check him out. Before we get to my interview with him, I just want to let you guys know that I am on the road. I will be in Ohio, Pennsylvania, the East Coast, Boston this week, and all over. You can get your tickets, charliebehrens.com. And also, folks, we are raising money for Doctors Without Borders, continuing to do that. You can check out the link in the show notes or follow them at Doctors Without Borders. At Doctors Without Borders anywhere on social media. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, here's my conversation with comedian Matteo Lane.
Great meeting you. I was going to say I'm traveling too. So,
well, if you want New York traffic just sort of blaring into your, if it gets too loud, let me know. I can close my windows and turn my air on, but it's the first like nice day in New York. So I have my windows open.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I can't hear anything like that. Has it been hot there? What do you mean? I haven't been paying attention to New York weather. Sweltering, swampy.
Yeah, New York, it's just September hits and then it's like we pay all this money for this rent for like 3 weeks out of the year for it to be like crisp, nice days and you're not sweating and everyone's happy and then it turns into winter.
Yeah, there's always just sort of the slush effect. I just feel like every time in New York, I've got my suitcase because I'm usually bouncing from one person's place to the other. And then you're just dragging, you've got like that salt stain, you know, on the suitcase. That's what I always remember with New York.
Yeah, but it's not like that. Where do you live? Wisconsin?
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in Chicago. It's the same thing, right? Like you get the salt, like your boots ruin salt stains, like pants ruin salt stain. Look at it, it gives a thumbs up. That's weird.
That is kind of weird. It's like the robots, dude. They are watching and it's a terrifying thing. No, you're absolutely right.
Wait, did we start the podcast?
I don't know. It kind of starts whenever it feels right.
All right.
Do you have any questions leading in?
No,
I figured you didn't. So I was just trying to be economical with your time. No, but for me, it was just that on a suitcase because I usually wouldn't have a suitcase, but it'd be just dragging that thing through town. You know, this is when I was like first going out there trying to sort of make it or whatever. But I would just have this salt line on my suitcase and that would be from New York, you know?
Yeah, I think about now, like when I grew up in Chicago, grew up in Arlington Heights and then moved to Chicago when I was 18, but still like, your like the back of your pants become like hard from the amount of salt that's sort of stuck to it.
Yeah.
And I guess we didn't care about our pants back then because I just was like, this is the look. Like, it just was it.
Yeah. I mean, it and then the sort of damp, just like you'd be in class with that. I went to UW Madison. So I would do a thing where I'd bike to class too. So you kind of like, there are these little things you could kind of use to squeeze your pants in so you didn't get chain whatever on them. And then we had like baggier pants. How old are you? You're about my age, right?
I'm 38.
Yeah, I'm 37. And not to brag or anything, you know, but
you do have a Wisconsin accent. I mean, I have a Chicago accent, but you're just sort of, you're in between me and the mother from Bobby's World.
Oh, really? That mm-hmm. that she's pretty far in too. I yeah. feel like she's very Minnesota, which would make sense. Chicago, Milwaukee, you know, Bemidji kind of a thing.
Not to cut you off, but it's like I forget like the Midwest accents because I'm so used to New York accents now.
Yeah.
I forget about like that. Oh gosh.
You know, I think being in Midwest and especially having this brand that's very Midwest, it's allowed me to really indulge in something that I was trying to get rid of for a while. So because I was in the news business. So
yeah, they try to hide it out of you.
Yeah. Do you miss Chicago?
No, I miss my family. And there's times I miss like, I mean, the thing for me is like, I'm happy where I'm working and I'm working in New York. You know, I can do stand up every night at the Cellar. Like,
yeah,
I'm happy where I work. I also love the look of New York. I love the urban design of New York. I like the density. I like the consistently being, you know, having people around you. I like that. I mean, I think people think of New York, they think of like Times Square, Hell's Kitchen, where it's like chaos. I live in the Village, so it's a little more neighborhoody. I'm not surrounded by skyscrapers, but yeah, I miss parts of Chicago. Like I miss my friends. I miss my family. I miss all 31 of my cousins. I miss my mom. I miss my niece. I miss my nephews. I miss, you know, it's like, yeah, that kind of stuff. But I did it too. I lived there, you know?
Yeah. When did you say you moved out?
25. I left Chicago. I moved to New York.
So were you doing, is that sort of where you started stand up, was in the Chicago scene?
Yeah. The first show that I ever did was, I think 2009. I've been doing it 16 years now. It was at Marty DeRosa's show in Old Town. No. What is it? Where is Zany's again in Chicago? Zany's
Old Town.
Where is it?
I think it's Old Town, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Am I thinking wrong? Like North in Lafayette, is that the street? LaSalle and North, like, is that
that sounds right, because you weren't doing the one in Rosemont, you were doing the one Chicago proper, right?
It was there. So let's just say
it was okay.
You know Chicagoans, so like North Wells Street. No, it's not the neighborhood though. I'll call my friend Sophia. But I did it there, and it was like I got 3 minutes to do my act, and Marty was nice enough to put me on. He was dating my friend, so that's why he did it. And then I had like 31 of my, like, literally my grandparents came, my cousins came, everybody came. And so I've been doing it since then. And then I really got into it, I would say around 2010, and then 2011. And then I got a job. I was illustrating for a living, and I got a job, a full-time job in New York. So I moved to New York in like a month and just kept doing open mics in New York. So Chicago was a great, like, base. Like, I really learned everything I needed to know, like how to develop my voice and how to do open mics and how to write jokes and how to, like, you know, mingle and how to, like, you know, there's like a business side to it. So Chicago was like the perfect place to sort of start.
Do you think like Chicago has like a comedic vibe to it or something, where like, yes, all these comedian, what like are distinctions for a Chicago comic, would you say?
I feel I can always recognize a Chicago comic, but it's not that they're theatrical. It's the, how do I like put this? Like, you can always tell a Chicago comic. They're different than New York comics. You know, New York comics, if you're from New York, I'm generalizing here, but you tend to be a little like more straightforward, one-linery, joke. And that's because your open mics are 2 minutes long. So you got to get to that joke quick. I'm talking about like open micers before you really develop your voice. you can see Chicago comics because maybe we get 3 or 4 minutes on stage, and Chicago has that, you know, improv influence in Chicago. The great thing about Chicago is that there's no industry. So you just kind of are on stage experimenting every night. So you get, I remember people like Candy Lawrence, who was like, she's phenomenal. And she would do like, she would scream and yell and, you know, go back to jokes and then do like, it was just like so out of the box, or like the Putterboss sisters or Beth Stelling or, you know, Cameron Esposito or Lisa Traeger and all these people, Marty DeRosa, like Danny Callis at the time too. Like there was just something about a Chicago comic. It kind of had like the stamp of Chicago to it. It's almost like a flavor than it is like specific. It's hard to describe. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And that like time on stage really, really, I think, does it. Because especially, you know, in the Midwest, I feel like it's a bit slower pace, maybe not to the extent that you like exaggerate it comedically speaking. But the audience is also, I think, like a little bit nicer, maybe, at least at first sniff, at least your open mic audience, you know, maybe they'll pretend to listen as opposed to just being on their phone. You know? Well,
because open micers in bigger cities, open micers are just other comics. So right. In Chicago, what was really similar to New York, Chicago and New York have so many similarities. It's like, I mean, I know people in DC who would do open mics for like 5 audience members, like people who went to go see open mics. I mean, that was unheard of in Chicago. You just did open mics for other comics, and New York was like that too. And you do 2 or 3 mics a night, which New York was like that too. So the jump to New York, I think that's the benefit for Chicago comics. We come in hot, we come in strong, and it's sort of like being like speaking Italian and then going to Spain. It's like, I'll learn it quick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And where everyone else is like coming from Mandarin, you know, Russian, you know, Talak, it's like they have a harder time adapting, where Chicagoans are like, got it.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. You also speak a lot of, I want to talk more about the comedy, but while you brought up the languages, you speak a lot of languages, I'm getting from like your stand up and everything. What was your like English first language?
Yeah. And then English first language. I learned Italian probably around like 14, because we have friends and family friends in Italy. And I really enjoyed the Italian part of my culture. And so I would just go back to Sicily, and you just have to learn it there because no one speaks English.
Yeah.
So you just kind of come back like, buongiorno, mamma. And then I learned Spanish. I feel like it's like a tapestry, like a slowly weaving in, just like years of kind of building up. But knowing Italian makes it so much easier to like speak Spanish, and then French eventually. But like my French and Spanish are, I would say, proficient, where my Italian is fluent.
Yeah. Okay. I like in your stand up how you weave that in, and you weave like the singing in and all that sort of stuff. I just feel like you have so many tools as a comic that it's almost like you throw it in there and it's like skills you don't even talk about. You know what I mean? I got skills I don't talk about. That's what it seems like.
Well, that makes it sound sexual. Yeah. I'm closing the windows because of course there hasn't been construction all day, but oh my God, I can't think how not strong I am. Oh, I hate that sound. Yeah, but
you got to put some WD-40 on your window seals there. Well,
that would require a straight person to be within these walls. I just have to find someone straight. Yeah, but I think the sort of like back and forth with like voices, and to me, it just is sort of like a natural way of speaking, I guess. That sounds so lame, but that's how my whole family talks. If they're telling stories, like the voices are kind of just included. And so I've always just kind of talked that way. And then people will be like, oh, I like you when you do voices on stage. And in my head, I'm like, voices. But then I think of voices as like the 80s, where like Jim Carrey is like, you guys want to see an impression? They turn around, they come back, and they're the impression. So yeah, I would say, unbeknownst to me, a lot of people comment on that, like the voices kind of weave in and out, which really makes me look like I have multiple personality disorder. But, you know,
I mean, it definitely is an asset for comedy, having multiple personalities. But you feel like that whole thing was sort of your family is kind of what developed your comedy? Like, did you grow up wanting to do comedy or just realize you're funny over time?
Well, I like as a gay person, well, one, I come from a very funny family. I mean, my mother and her brothers and sisters had a very traumatic childhood, and I think they chose humor as a way to deal with it. So everyone's very, very funny, and not funny like put something on their head, and like they're very witty. And so when you eat, I grew up next to my cousins and we grew up like brothers and sisters and we're all the same age. So when, you know, you sit at a dinner table and there's 12 of you, you have to keep up, you know. Yeah. So you get your skills pretty young, and but unbeknownst to you. I mean, even today, if I watch my Aunt Cindy, she's telling a story. She has no idea that she's creating a story. She's bringing in premises. There's punchlines. She's using voices. She's got like a whole arc. Like, it just flows out of her naturally, which I do think is a very big characteristic of Italians in general. Like Italians, even if you go to Italy, they're very, everything is kind of this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say, what was the other question you asked me?
Just kind of your, is that where you got the passion for comedy? Like, was there a thing where you're like, oh, I want to be a comedian? Or was it this thing where it happened through your family naturally?
Well, I think it kind of just, I fell into it because I didn't, I always say this. I know there were. I did not have access to. I didn't see a gay man do stand-up comedy till I was 23. So I didn't know it was available to me. My assumption, along with sports and a lot of other really male-dominated things, was like it was for men or very specific women. So I didn't fall in love with stand-up until I started listening to Kathy Griffin when I was like 16, because she was the first person I remember in my life speak positively about gay people while still making fun of us. Like, she was on the inside. And yeah. I remember my homophobia was so internalized. I thought to myself, she shouldn't talk about gay people. That'll ruin her career. So you have to remember like where we were as a society, where I was, where a lot of gay people were, you know. So, but all that to say is like, I didn't know it was available to me. So the first gay person I ever saw stand-up comedy ever was at an open mic. His name was Bill Cruz. He's a very funny comic. He's a Chicago comic. That was the first person ever. And then it like clicked with me. I'm like, oh, like gay people can do stand-up with straight people, or gay people can do stand-up. It doesn't have to be a one-man show. It doesn't have to be about our trauma. It doesn't have to be Rent. It doesn't have to be musical involved. It doesn't have to be characters. It doesn't have to be improv. It doesn't have to be, it can be stand-up. So I was unaware of it. Now, obviously there were like Jim David and Rick Chrome and Mario Cantone. And, you know, there's a lot of comics who were doing it in the 80s closeted for a long time. Mario Cantone, not so much, but Mario Cantone, I would say was like is like the pioneer of doing gay comedy at a time it wasn't acceptable. But you just have to remember, we didn't have YouTube. Whatever was on TV was the only thing available to me. So those things were not available to me. So I think a lot of other gay people of my time, just we didn't see it. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we easily forget, what year was it? Maybe like 2011 or something, when Joe Biden just off the cuff being like, yeah, I think gay marriage should be legalized. And then at that time, Obama wasn't even publicly for it. And then, you know, it's just crazy to think it wasn't that long ago. And this is kind of the time when you're like starting to get into comedy. Were your first bits about being gay? Yeah.
Yes. I knew you were going to ask that, because it was like, you know, I love people were like, you know, did you hide it? I'm like, how could I hide it? Listen to my voice. There's no way I could hide it. Can you imagine me going on stage? My girlfriend is the worst. You know, just, there was no world. I was also, let me just say this, was lucky to come up at a time where being gay, I think if I had done it 10 years earlier, I wouldn't have had the same results. And I think if I had done it 10 years later, it would have been, the resistance would have been way different. So I was at this time where it was just acceptable and I was never judged for it. And the people that were the most supportive of me, which were straight men, comics, I found straight men and women and obviously gays, but like you're surrounded predominantly by straight men. And you would be surprised how comedians don't care about you at all. They don't care where you come from. All they care is, do you have good jokes? Do you have a good work ethic? Do you actually care about this? They just want to see you care about it as much as they do. And that was sort of my insight to comedy. You know, I think it's easy. Like there are times obviously where there is people are against you just for being gay, but I would say I've had a really positive experience. You know, I think it's easy to be defensive and assume the worst, you know, people are going to hate me because of X, Y, and Z, but I really put myself out there and was welcomed with open arms. And I have some of my best memories are my open mic days and bar show days. They're just the best.
Yeah. When you think about those, do you kind of see them now? Like with sort of rose colored glasses, like were you at that time, was this sort of the thing you wanted to do when you had to make it and you had that pressure of it? Or, I mean, at the time you had another job working in a great industry. So right. Did that kind of help you early on, not put too much pressure on it?
No, there was always pressure. You know, I look back at it now and I look at it for what it was. It was an exciting time. I figured out what I wanted to do in life. I was surrounded by like-minded people. I was surrounded by a community, and I still am surrounded by a community that doesn't judge you for being weird, thinking weird, saying things weird. You know, I think I never quite had a community that I felt fully accepted by until I was with comedians. And to this day, my favorite thing to do is sit at the cellar table and sit and bitch and moan with Keith Robinson. And, you know, it just, I don't know, but I would say like my open mic days, I was very driven and I loved every minute of it. Just the process of feeling yourself get better, the process of seeing people react to you, the kind of the window got less narrow and the world seemed more open to you, and traveling with my friend Evan Williams to every single open mic. And at that point, your only currency is just the respect of other comics. So if I'm in a room and I make Dan Soder laugh, that's enough to get me going for the next 3 weeks, you know? Yeah. I love it. I'm one of those people, a lot of comedians, 99% of the people I started with, they drop off or they realize, oh, you know what? I'm a writer or I'm a producer or I'm a host or I'm a book writer. Or I'm an actor. Or I'm a, and I find more and more. I've been doing this 16 years now. I am a stand-up comic. I respect this first. I'm not doing this to get something else. I'm doing everything else to keep doing this. I did 50 shows at the Comedy Cellar in July. I had the month off and I needed to write new material and I did as many spots as I could. I love it. I love the traveling. I love the shows. I love the art form. I love the creating new jokes, the back and forth, the dialogue with comics. I love it. I really, really love it.
That's cool. And you see that you mentioned work ethic too. Do you feel like there's a certain work ethic in maybe Midwest comics or New York comics? Can you tell like a difference culturally or regionally with respect to the work ethic?
Well, I think New York serves itself more for people who, I mean, New York is way more cutthroat. I mean, no question. New York, it has that stereotype, obviously, for years of being like, it'll chew you up and spit you out. It will, because New York is a city that doesn't care about you. So you just have to kind of figure out your way through it. It will never care about you. If you leave, it's not crying. You know, if you stay, it's not celebrating. It doesn't care. Chicago is a city that cares about you. You know, and so it's a little different, but I would say I came up with the training of fine arts and opera singing. And I kind of had an understanding of the amount of work I'd have to put in to get the results. So my approach towards stand-up is a little more systematical, I think, systematic than maybe other people's approach, but everyone has a different approach. Like, you know, me and Lisa Traeger started at the same time. She's one of the funniest comics I've ever met. Her and I have wildly different approaches towards stand-up comedy, and the results are the same. You know what I'm saying? She's a huge success. I just saw her film her Netflix special. She's amazing. She's way funnier than I am. You know, so it's like, obviously my approach works for me, but my approach was way more in line with like opera training. Like, okay, when I was doing open mics, I wasn't going out. I wasn't dancing. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't doing drugs. I wasn't doing Fire Island. I wasn't doing P-Town. I wasn't doing none of it. It was Monday to Monday stand up. That's it. I only hung out with stand ups. I would do open mics. I'd work on one joke per week, flesh it out till I got to the creek on Friday, and then sort of debut that joke on Friday. If you get called in the first group, that, you know, you're doing better, and you do the same process next week and bar shows and build your material. So I kind of look at it more that way than other people.
Yeah. And
not to say that Lisa's lazy, by the way. I'm just saying that her and I approach it very differently, and I think she would agree to that.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis. More than 2 million without power, streets and roads impassable, widespread devastation from Florida to Georgia to the Carolinas, all from Hurricane Helene. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis especially concerned about Gulf Coast and Panhandle communities that took the brunt of the Category 4 storm.
This coast from probably Sarasota up until up through Pasco for sure, where you had feet of storm surge that caused a lot of these homes to flood.
At least 64 people killed in the storm. Overseas, the Israeli Defense Force announcing a large-scale attack by air was carried out last night against military targets in Yemen. A high-ranking Hezbollah official killed, and the infrastructure and ports targeted were said to have been used by Iran to transfer weapons to the Houthi rebels. On the presidential campaign trail, just a couple of days until the VP hopefuls, Democrat Tim Walz and Republican J.D. Vance square off in a debate Tuesday night. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Jordan Love returns. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with Sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. After missing 2 weeks with an MCL sprain, Love will take over at quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. Love said he had been moving around better in practice this week.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I feel like I'm getting better every day. Moving around, getting out there and practicing, things like that is feeling better.
Love added he worked hard to get back for today's border battle.
I've been trying to get back as fast as I can, no matter who the opponent was. But definitely, I mean, you look at this week and NFC North opponent, a 3-0 team, really good team, so it would definitely mean a lot to be able to get back and push myself to get back for this game.
Kickoff against the Minnesota Vikings is at noon. USC dominated Wisconsin football in the second half yesterday, putting up 28 points in the second half to stun the Badgers 38-21. Wisconsin has dropped two in a row and hosts Purdue on Saturday with an 11 a.m. kick. The Brewers, who are locked into the NL's third seed, defeated a potential playoff opponent, the New York Mets, with a 6-0 shutout Saturday. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Tons of sunshine for your Sunday. Light east winds and lower 80s for highs. Tonight, clear skies, mid-50s. On Monday, more sunshine around the area. Highs once again in the lower 80s. Cooler with 60s for your Tuesday. It's 72 at our studios.
Wisconsin's volunteers are making a difference in our communities every single day. Find the perfect volunteer opportunities for you at volunteerwisconsin.org. You can filter by location, organization, cause, accessibility, and more, all to help find the best fit for you. Go to volunteerwisconsin.org or get in touch with your local United Way or Volunteer Center today. volunteerwisconsin.org is hosted by United Way of Wisconsin and Serve Wisconsin. Paid for by United Way of Wisconsin.
I don't know about other states, but...
Teach Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, Dan Davies and Craig Kinnett talk about their giant spider invasion event, and...
The lovable producer Connor will give a full report after watching in person the green and gold take on the purple people eaters.
Nightlight with Teach Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, if you're just tuning in, I'm Charlie Behrens, and this is my conversation with comedian Mateo Lane.
When you were coming up, social media wasn't as big of a deal, but now, you know, in order to do stand up, really, you got to have that social media following to do your own shows, headline your own shows, do you find yourself sort of splitting your time in ways you wish you weren't? Or do you find it to be all like sort of a self-serving thing and you find the joy in doing the clips, the podcasts, all that sort of stuff in the same way that you do stand up?
Well, it's a couple things. I think one big mistake younger comics 5 years and younger are doing is they're putting their clips up online. And I know I sound like an old fart saying that, but the reason I can put stand up online is because I have 16 years worth of stand up to put online. You know, I remember this is 2021, April 2021, and I was struggling. I couldn't sell tickets. I had no money. We were just coming out of the pandemic, and you know, Schultz and Sam Morrell started putting all their jokes up online. So I was going to do the Miami Improv and I only sold 21 tickets for a Thursday. So they canceled the show. So I called Schultz and I said, because me and Andrew are from the same graduating class of comics. Yeah. And he is a very smart business person. So I called him and said, I never ask for help and I don't know what to do. And he talked to me for, I think, 2.5 hours. And was like, take the hour that you did for Netflix that they didn't, because Netflix didn't want my hour, take the hour that they don't want, cut it up, caption it, put it out, you know, do it once. But he told me, he's one of those people where I'm one of those people, you reach out a hand, I reach back. I've wasted so much breath on comics asking for help. I sit there for hours and tell them what I think. They don't change a thing. For me, it's even though it's under my nose, if you tell me what to do, I'll do it. I'm a good worker. So I did exactly what Andrew told me to do. And it was like, I mean, the next year I was doing the Beacon Theater. So, you know, but yeah. by that point I had my old hour and I was already working on my new hour. So I could work on my new hour and perform a different hour on the road for people while still displaying my old hour for people to see. And as of late, what I do is twice a year I go at the Cellar and do a crowd work show. Twice.
I love those. Yeah.
And I don't do any crowd work when you see me live. I just do it twice a year just because, one, I have the audience ask me a question. So it's more bit oriented. I'm not sort of accosting somebody in the front row. You know?
Yeah.
So it can be more bit oriented. And then I can use those clips with my podcast to kind of hold me over till I can present my next hour. So I found a system that works for me.
Definitely. Yeah. And those advice shows are super funny. And the views on them are, you know, speak for themselves. I think the one I saw was like 45 minutes or something. Do you film for the full 45 or are you sort of cutting the best hitters?
I would say we film for an hour and then I don't think people have patience to sit there for even 40. I mean, I think they're both like 40 minutes or 37 minutes. Like, it's enough of me.
Yeah.
You know, like, you got it. You know, I'm not a precious comedian or an artist. I'm very much about edit, cut, get out. Like, let's just get to the point of it. So yeah, I keep it around 35, 37 minutes each, but we film for an hour and then you just take out 20. Cause sometimes people do ask boring questions. You know, I mean, the good questions are people who say, this one girl was like, I broke up with this guy on ChatGPT. Yeah. You know, so I said, read the letter. So she had to open up. They lock your phones away at the cell. She should rip it open, read what she wrote. That's great. Cause I have so much to work off of. Then you get some girl who's like, my boyfriend, you know, he's kind of boring. Okay. Well, I can't do anything with that. Like, I don't know what you want to tell you. Like, this isn't fun. I'm not a crowd work comic, even though I think people might position me as a comic who can do crowd work, but people who are really masters at crowd work are like Jessica Kirsten. Like, she's a master at crowd work. But I do it because it's fun and it's a skill that I built up for 16 years, and I do it just a couple times a year just to sort of something different, and then I'll put my material back out too.
Yeah, but you don't like doing that in sort of the paid paid shows while you're on the road, all that.
I have a crafted, worked on show. Mm-hmm. I have crowd work and because they're theaters. I don't know how Matt Rife does it. I can't imagine crowd work in a theater. That requires its own special talent. Like, he's doing crowd work for 8,000 people. My brain can't compute.
Right.
So I do just my material. And that's every single week I'm at the cellar every night working on material. So when you come see me on the road, I want people to feel like they're getting a really good show.
We've got this segment on this podcast, which is what makes you say cripes. Growing up in Chicago, did you have family members that, you know, would prefer not to take the Lord's name in vain, but just say, ah, cripes?
You're not Italian, are you?
No.
Yeah. No.
That's not Italians. Just go for the full JC. Yep. My grandpa Bob was, my grandma Sue was kind of on him about his language, you know, and we were out fishing this one time and got this big muskie, and he was trying to change Christ to cripes, and he was trying to say cripes almighty, but he said, ah, Christ all Friday. You know, he changed the wrong word, which I thought was hilarious, but, that's kind of the basis for, this podcast, was just that word. But basically, what makes you say cripes is like, what's your biggest pet peeve? What's pissing you off these days? You got anything off the top of the dome?
People that are older than 12 and still chew with their mouths open. Like, how have you just, where are you from? I just don't understand, like, how you got this far. I don't understand. No one in your life has stopped you. I don't understand people who are fine with people. Like, you see, like, an old married couple, well, he chews with his mouth open. Bitch, you have got to work on, like, you have got to threaten him, give him an ultimatum. Like, there's nothing to me more cringeworthy. I hate the sound. I think you're an idiot. If you eat with your mouth open, your IQ has dropped. I don't care what you've done. Your IQ has just dropped to zero. You look like a fool. You're disgusting. It's just like, get it together. That is my biggest pet peeve.
There is a miraculous number of people that do that too, with the absolute worst food. And I feel like Italian food might be some of the worst food you can eat with your mouth open. Like, if you get some sort of Alfredo situation with the white, anything white and creamy, you don't really want to, because then it, like, does the thing, you know. Ranch is another one. What do you call it? Like, one of them, why can't you think of it? What's the salad that you shake with all the ranch and it's just lettuce and ranch?
The Caesar salad?
The Caesar salad, yeah. Yeah. I think that's Caesar, right?
No, it is creamy. Is it like anchovy something? I don't know. When I eat salads, I'm so bored. Oh, a Cobb salad, they're saying?
Could be a Cobb. Whatever has the ranch on it and a bunch of other stuff.
Controversial. I don't like ranch.
Well, that is fairly controversial. And this is where this podcast ends, actually. You're not a fan of ranch. You prefer, like, what, blue cheese or what?
No, if I eat a salad, oh my God, it sounds so annoying. If I eat a salad, I want like a little olive oil and lemon squeezed on it. Maybe some salt and pepper. That's it. Like on a fresh, like a house salad or something.
That's very Italian of you. It's very Mediterranean, kind of.
It sounds so boring. Blue cheese bothers me. I don't get it. You know, ranch is, I don't know. I'm not, I just, I can't. I haven't found my friendship with ranch yet.
Do you not like the taste of it, or do you not like the texture of it?
I don't mind the texture. I'm not in love with the taste. Like, sometimes I want to eat the thing and taste the thing, and then you put ranch on it, and then I'm just tasting textured ranch, if that makes sense.
All right. Well, yeah, I get that. What do you do if you do wings, though?
Wings are just by themselves. I don't know.
Doing dry wings?
No, they have sauce at the cellar. They got sauce on their wings and it's good, but I wouldn't put ranch on it. They have a really good sauce, like a hot sauce. I don't know what the sauce, like a wing sauce on it. I like that. But then you dip it in the ranch, and the ranch is colder than the rest of it. Now we're ruining the temperature.
That's fire and ice, dude. You want that.
No, that's for, I mean, fire. What is this? Game of Thrones? Too much. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big ranch person.
All right. Well, I think you can, I was going to say, if you do crowd work, you don't in your shows, but you got your show coming up in Milwaukee, right?
I do.
Have you played Milwaukee before?
I did. I played Milwaukee a year and a half ago. I forget the venue. It was almost like a music venue. It was really cool.
Turner Hall?
Yeah, maybe that's it. Or where am I performing this time in Milwaukee?
You're at the Pabst this time.
Oh, I think it was Turner Hall. It was great. The audience was great. And I found a really good coffee shop nearby, and I would have I got there a day earlier, so I would get coffee there, and I really enjoyed it. They were nice. I mean, people in Wisconsin are so nice, even if they can smell that I'm from Illinois.
Well, yeah, they can definitely sniff that out. You know, it's the hair is very nice and the beard is very well trimmed. And, you know, I'm going to suss out Bears fan right at that point. Turner Hall is a cool spot. Actually, my brother, they were renovating Turner Hall. And they took out all the floorboards and they put them in the dumpster. My brother and his buddy went out to the dumpster and got some good floorboards because you can do some stuff with those. So I made this guitar holder on my wall out of the floorboards from Turner Hall. That was actually my first show. Yeah.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was sweet. So you never know what you find in a dumpster is basically the bottom line on that. So as a Chicagoan, what were your first impressions of people from Wisconsin?
Well, come on now. We would go to the Wisconsin Dells. We would go to Eagle River. We would go to Door County. You know, it's like everyone in Chicago is like, we're leaving Chicago. We're going to the Wisconsin Dells. And everyone just from Chicago is in the Wisconsin Dells. Door County, to me, I remember going as a kid because my mom and dad liked Door County. And in my impression, I have nothing to base this off of, but it just seemed like a perfect place for lesbians. Like Door County just seemed perfect for like a lesbian couple. Like there seemed to be like lighthouses, maybe some like shell art. but my favorite place to go was Eagle River. When I was a kid, me and my cousins, and by the way, every vacation I did as a child was with all of my cousins. We would go to Eagle River, and Eagle River was like the best. I mean, it was like a 6-hour drive, which I don't know how all like 20 of us did it in these two vans. It was a nightmare. But it was the most fun. Like they had like a lake. We were in a cabin. You know, you go fishing, crawfish hunting.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. Yeah. So my memories of Wisconsin were always like some kind of vacation in the summertime. And I guess cheese.
Yeah. A lot of cheese fudge shops, cheese fudge adult toys. You
what
know,
is the- with the fudge shops, by the way, every small town I go to, there's just a shop with fudge. I'm like, no one wants fudge
in Eagle River, especially. OK, so you got like for people who haven't been there, there's this window and you watch people make fudge. Right. That's what you're talking about in downtown Eagle River. We used to go. We used to go to this same area you went to. Yeah, I don't know. It's very random. And in Wisconsin, there's a lot of towns where they have a designated fudge shop. I don't get it. But you know why? Everybody, like for someone who watches your house while you're gone or whatever, you want to get them a gift. You get them some fudge. You get them a brick.
You have one of bite of the fudge. It's over. Like just give me a chocolate chip cookie. Like the fudge. It's devastating. It's dilapidated. It's like it is. It's a texture. It's like a caramel chocolate.
I'll tell you this. Some people really like that fudge. Some people see that is a really nice gift. You know, when you're pulling out the dessert and you're getting fudge. And the nice thing is you only need like a sliver of it and you have diabetes. So
I can say one piece, you've lost a foot. By the way, because you're so Midwest, do I scream Midwest to you or what how do you feel towards me? Am I more New Yorker?
No, I feel like I hear it actually in your voice. Like you do have some words that you go like Midwest on. Now, you know, you've been in New York for a while, so obviously, you know, I'm going back to the haircut and the beard. By the way, like this, I think I got to get a haircut. Do you have any thoughts on that? You give advice. What do you think I should do with the hair?
Well, I'm a bald person masquerading as someone with hair because I've had two hair transplants. So the fact that you even have hair as long as any sort of main teen character in a mid-90s movie,
yeah,
you know, I'm wildly envious of.
Are you? Hey, your hair looks really good. So I'm.
Yeah, they did a good job. Look at that.
That only took two goes, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, one would have done it, but then I wanted more here and I wanted it brought down a little here more. So
first of all, it's cool you got that hair transplant money. That's pretty slick right there.
That was my first paycheck. I said, when I finally make it, I'm getting myself hair. And that I did.
That had to feel great. Did you get people who knew you as like a hair complicated person to give you shit when you got the hair transplant?
Well, I was hair complicated. It should be the name of my book because I was like, I mean, I have a whole bit about it, like getting the surgery, but essentially, like, you know, when you get a hair transplant, like before, like you'd have to coif your hair, you know, for like 40 minutes to try and make it look like some kind of resemblance of a hairline. And then you have to avoid like rainy days, windy days, pools, you know, like you just don't, like, I was never in a New York, like Sam Morrell is my neighbor. He was like, he's like, you've never been in a New York sauna. I was like, under no circumstances. And Mark Norman was like, yeah, you're a liar. I was like, no, it was a hair thing. Like if I went in the sauna, like a steam room, it would reveal the secrets. So, you know, to me, now I could, but it's still funny. I'm like, now I have fear going in a sauna in New York City. Like some old man's going to try and but yeah, it's like for a multitude of reasons, I've never been in a sauna, but yeah. So there's like fear around like activities with the hair, like even like riding a bike. So I don't know. Now that I have hair, it's so nice. Like on a windy day, I'm like, do your worst.
That's funny. You don't even think about all those things with the hair, like the biking and the pool and all that, you know?
No, you hair privilege.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm showing my hair privilege here. That's wild. Well, were you like, I think I've seen some, I've seen older pictures of you. You were a hat guy, right?
I'll show you my hair before the surgery. Yes, I was a hat guy. By the way, I will say my accent is still Chicago, but there are some things that are now New York. I've changed how I say some words and it's kind of shocking.
Well, in the way you said accent, I heard an in the accent, which is great. That makes me feel right at home in this conversation.
So you can see the top of my head, right?
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah.
That was it before.
Oh, wow. Holy smokes.
I know. And then the other part, like you can see like how far back my hair actually went.
Oh, wow.
So like, like there.
Yeah. You had that deep V going, the widow's peak. Do you think, you know, like for folks who don't have hair, like my buddy's got the horseshoe going right now, you know, like the George Costanza. Do you feel like that look has merit? Should people like bring that back?
I'm going to pull from Joe List. One time I was in the, I was in Central Park with Joe List, who's a really funny comic. And this guy walked by, I mean, it's hot, it's summer. Everyone's got their shirts off. And this guy walked by and he's wearing like an oversized buttoned up shirt with the khaki pants. He's got glasses and he had this horseshoe hairline and he's pale, right? Hasn't seen the sun. And as he's walking by, Joe List stares at him and looks back at us and goes, a classic. Yeah, it's definitely a vintage look, you know. Like you see those things where it's like, why do people look older in the 80s or 90s? Like, yeah, you know, 24-year-olds looked like they were 42,
right? You
know? But I don't know. I don't know what that's about.
I feel like that, I think it's, I don't know, social media or whatever, but people are doing more work stuff, like kind of preventive work, like are moisturizing. Botox?
Yeah, I get Botox.
Yeah, Botox, or like just like really like the moisturizer companies out there, man, they gotta be making a killing because they'll charge like $50 for a little bottle of something, you know. Well, and you're like, what is this? They're like, it's whale sperm. And you're like, the
well, because white people didn't get the memo until like 3 years ago that they have to use moisturizer. Like when you get out of the shower, you have to moisturize your body, your neck, your face. Like people were just raw dogging it. And it's like everyone else on earth looked at us like, you morons.
Well, I did not know that until not that many years ago either. You know, I mean, my buddy told me, I remember we were both doing like, I don't know, some kind of news. I was in news before. And he's like, yeah, you have to put moisturizer here and here and here. And I was like, or what? And he's like, you're going to get wrinkles. I was like, no one's going to care, you know. And then fast forward, now I see what he was saying. But so I'm late to the moisturizing game, but sunscreen too. You know,
yeah, sunscreen's big too. Yeah. Yeah.
You get that SPF going. Were you a Bears fan bringing it back to Chicago?
I mean, I wasn't a sports fan in general, so I don't know anything about it. It's just a world that sort of didn't exist to me. I knew it was there. I didn't care. I mean, my Uncle Mike was a big Bears fan, and my Uncle Mike had the Chicago accent, the like, the Bears. you know, but I mean, a bigger in my family than football was the White Sox.
Oh, so yeah.
Everybody loved the White Sox. So even though I know nothing about baseball, I don't give two shits. I just inherently hate the Cubs.
That's fantastic. I knew we would find common ground on that. The Cubs, I mean, the White Sox, that's a respectable team, you know.
Not right now. My Aunt Cindy calls them the White Sucks because apparently they're just doing terrible.
They are doing terrible, but I feel like they're like the Cleveland Browns, you know, like if you like them long enough, whether or not they're good or bad, it's almost fun to like a terrible team. You know, like we did it in Wisconsin for a long time.
Yeah, but White Sox fans are the only fans I watch. Like Cubs fans don't like talk bad about the Cubs ever. There's a, you know what I mean? Like if they're doing poorly, like they still try and find a way to like work around that. White Sox fans are just, that's also like my family. Like the White Sox fans are the South Side Chicago people. They will just talk shit to the Sox. You suck. You stink. You know, where the Cubs are like wasted by like the third inning. They don't even know what's going on. Their dilapidated Wrigley Field is falling apart. There's so many Cubs fans getting angry right now. It's hysterical. I don't even know what I'm talking about. But like when you grow up in the north side of Chicago and you have anything White Sox, it's ripped off your lawn, which is also hysterical. It's so funny to me, like Chicago, like these two teams, like Fran Lebowitz said it best. She was arguing with somebody about sports and she was saying like, she goes, I don't understand sports. Like people are saying, you know, these are companies. They're companies. She goes, they're not for you. They are for companies. It's like walking on the street and saying, thank God Pepsi won today. You know, like, they're a company. And I was like, yeah, I totally get that.
It is kind of a weird thing, especially when people talk in the like, we won yesterday. We did amazing. Like, oh, really did you? You know, but I will say this for the Packers. We own the team. Like we are shareholders in the team.
Like the state of Wisconsin?
People in Wisconsin or people anywhere can become a shareholder in the Packers. Every few years you have an opportunity to become an owner, which means you pay $275 and they send you a piece of paper that says you are an owner and you can attend shareholder meetings and the whole deal. Once a year, you sit in the hot stadium, Lambeau Field, in the summer and you can hear what's going on with it. But yeah, I don't want to break, but I own an NFL team.
But no one's brought up the fact that the Packers are like another word for saying a top.
You know, funny you should mention that. So that comes from the Acme Packing Company. But you know what? Whatever expands the fan base, you know, frankly, you know, we'll take it. You know,
yeah, well, there's no Packers in Manhattan. Everyone's a you know, I just remember like the kids who were Packers fans, like in school, like had those giant cheese, like styrofoam cheese
heads.
Yeah. Cheese heads on them. Yeah. My friend Matt Menzel, I wonder if he's still doing this. He was obsessed with sports and his family, I think, was from Wisconsin because the Milwaukee Bucks, I think, were the basketball team. And he would always talk about it, but he was a big Wisconsin fan. So he was always, yeah, he would talk about like the Packers and stuff, but sports, I don't give a shit, dude. I mean, who cares? You know, the White Sox, the Cubs, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's fun, but it, you know, the same way, like, I don't know. I can't think of like another, I guess RuPaul's Drag Race isn't for everybody. It exists. It's a huge show. It's won a million Emmys. I don't think some dad in Wisconsin's like, oh gosh, you know, did Bianca Del Rio come back this year? Like, I don't think that's going to happen.
That's all the time we have for now, folks. For my full conversation with Mateo, check out the Cripes Cast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down. Just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin. The Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
From the Mississippi to the Apple and points eastward, you're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
Hey
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this Civic Media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of Civic Media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.